It is the end of January of 2023. They say it was one of the warmer Januaries on record in our parts, but it ended with a cold spell. This is Leo for KTWH, Two Harbors Community Radio. I have our every other week visit with Gooseberry Falls State Park naturalist Michaela Rice. Michaela, you're in the building. Have you been keeping warm during this cold snap? I guess that's the term.
Yeah, I'm doubled, well, not doubled up on my long underwear, but I got top and bottom, and I am sweating in here.
You're not going to tell me to put another log on the fire, I bet. Yes, our equipment keeps things nice and toasty in the studios, even during these extended cold waves. Long or short in duration, they all probably impact our four-leggeds for sure. Obviously, plants are in it for the long haul and have to make it through cold waves to be hardy perennials. But what do you have to say, Michaela, about what the mammals of interest and our bird life are enduring during this time period?
Well, they're definitely still trying to find food. I know the bird feeders are very active with our flying friends and those furry friends, mostly of the cervid nature, our dear friends.
You want to clarify for those who aren't into taxonomy what we've
Yep. It has been making me think a lot about a topic that you and I briefly mentioned a few weeks ago, and I did some more thinking about wildlife feeding. There's been a lot of things prompting me on social media as well. I've been seeing a lot of residents putting out food for these deer, like apples and corn and hay, or, you know, whatever farmers have. So
I am interested to hear you say that you who have been are young enough to have been a student not that long ago, what you learned. I mean, what do wildlife, natural resource people talk about in terms of wildlife feeding and how it may distort the balance, the ecology, or promote disease? There are all kinds of different issues that arise, right?
I mean, absolutely.
Is there a lot of controversy, or is it kind of unanimity, but the general public doesn't really hear from the scientific community much on this?
I think the scientific community is, pretty settled on the boundaries of when wildlife feeding might be appropriate. But the public definitely does not necessarily agree with that. It's a common issue, right, that the public sees one side, doesn't understand the impacts of decisions that we make. They don't follow the animal throughout their whole life. So they just see these glimpses of these interactions. And it's really motivated by good things. Feeding wildlife, however, is typically self-motivated. It brings joy to the feeder, the person. And because animals respond well to food, they will respond well to all food, we think it's a positive thing and that it's benefiting them. However, most feeding wildlife turns out it has negative consequences. And even from kind of the research that I've done just to make sure that I'm still with the up and up, I think the community has accepted that feeding birds is socially acceptable and scientifically acceptable for a few reasons. And I think why feeding birds is not a big of a problem as feeding animals on the ground is because they are kind of separated in space and they don't have as many behavioral changes or conflicts with humans like our four-legged friends. They're not breaking into our sheds or cabins or houses. They're not running out in front of the road. You know, my neighbor literally had young turkey knocking on her like glass sliding glass door in search of food.
I was thinking of turkeys as one of the animals that could become more of a pest.
I guess they're considered a bird, but I consider them a ground dwelling animal. Gosh, this is getting complicated.
Two-legged rodent? No, come on.
Yeah, Michaela. Kind of. So when we feed animals, obviously we're congregating them, right? And so they're all coming together in a very unnatural space for them. And that can cause, like you said, disease and parasite issues. We're exposing them to our bacteria and our parasites, but they're also being exposed to each other's. So you also get across species at a feeding site. Often in Minnesota, you'll see possums, raccoons, deer, you know, rabbits and stuff. Yes, they naturally interact, but sure. not at this high concentration at like a feeding station.
Are there any particular pathogens or diseases that come to mind that go across species? A lot of the talk about feeding the cervids, as mm-hmm. you said, would be about chronic wasting disease mm-hmm. potentially spreading, and that's between deer. But now what are we concerned about between different species?
I think ticks is a big, all the issues with the tick diseases. Okay. And then I'm thinking other parasites, possibly like sure. mange or right. I didn't have time to get into the bacterial diseases that may infect them. But there are also like there's HPV, deer and rabbits also can get these huge warts. That's more in their own species. But yes, there are many diseases.
Okay.
So feeding deer is currently banned in many parts of the state for CWD, like you mentioned. But then when you bring animals to a place that they wouldn't normally look for food, you're also changing their behavior, right? So you're drawing these animals out into the open. There was an article just released by I worked with Tim Lyons down in the Farmland region with the DNR Fish and Wildlife. And he just kind of made a comment about people feeding pheasants. It's so cold that they're putting corn on the side of the road. And he made a statement about how that could be drawing them out of this cover right. and bringing them out into places that they could be eaten. And so we don't think about what we're exposing these animals
to
either.
So exposure to
predators.
Predation, maybe bringing them across roads that they might not have crossed.
Yep.
Otherwise, if there's a well-known feeding station for mm-hmm. deer, for instance, they may make a daily migration back and forth over a road, and over the course of a winter, somebody's going to get hit.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Is that a fair statement?
Absolutely, yep. So there's also a really interesting disease that I learned about today called angel wing, and it is from feeding ducks and birds bread, and they can develop this disease within 2 days of this high carbohydrate diet. Another thing with deer in the wintertime is they can get acidosis in their stomach. Their stomach is run by bacteria. We do not have the type of microorganisms in our bellies that deer have, and it's how they digest all of that plant material that our stomachs cannot handle. And it takes up to 2 weeks for their microorganisms to develop and change based on what they're eating. And when you eat corn, when you haven't been exposed to corn, corn makes ethanol. It breaks down. It's got a lot of different carbohydrates. And specifically with corn, it causes like bloat, and the deer can die within 72 hours. They have found dead deer at some of the state parks down in the cities like Fort Snelling because people will come in and dump corn.
Right.
And 2 days later, they find dead deer.
Right.
Those people who are feeding don't follow that deer.
Of course. They never see the outcome right. on that individual.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times when people are thinking of feeding, they see a benefit to an individual animal. And my question to you is going to be all about the whole population level, but you're saying that individual animals may often have an outcome that isn't so positive, but the person feeding them is getting this feeling of doing good, but they're not actually seeing how it affects the
Absolutely.
One particular
animal. And that's
the
cycle, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't think this supplemental feeding or these little treats and stuff, it's not helping really the population as a whole. Bird feeding, that's a different story. We could talk about that differently.
Right.
But with these critters that you're throwing out your table scraps and stuff, yeah, it's not helping the population. These animals are made to starve. Their bodies know how to starve, and they know how to metabolize fat, and they actually planned for starvation.
Yeah.
So yes, they look hungry and they act hungry, but their bodies know exactly what's going on. And so by us introducing these things, our food could have bacteria on it as well that their stomachs are not used to.
Interesting.
And so there's just so many things that we are risking
sure.
by feeding these animals.
Wow. As we get deeper and deeper into the winter, longer and longer into that period where you say that they're evolutionarily adapted to going through a very hungry period,
mm-hmm.
we might mess around a lot
Absolutely.
With that natural response by giving them very concentrated types of feed at times.
Yeah, and especially their metabolism, their stomachs, their guts are in that starvation mode, and that's okay for them. That's their homeostasis for that time. And when we introduce, yeah, these foreign foods, I mean, imagine what happens when you eat something super, super unusual. You know, maybe you're on a certain diet or something, and all of a sudden you eat this really, really rich food.
Right.
You end up probably, you know, in the bathroom with a hurt tummy for a while.
And, indeed, and it's a bad time of the year to have GI distress if you're an animal.
Yep.
Out in the cold, in the coldest times of the year. And we don't know how long this cold time is going to last. It looks like we're already going to get relief by this coming weekend, Michaela. That was very interesting, and we'll probably return the wildlife feeding, but that's pretty helpful. About birds, though, is one of the factors that so many of our bird populations have been struggling, and this might be a difference maker to have feeding?
Yeah, the research that I was seeing was more about range expansion that bird feeding could be assisting. So especially there's a hummingbird that has shown its range expansion far north, especially with these new hummingbird feeders and more people keeping hummingbird feeders out. Yeah, the research is showing more about range expansion. But it does help some of these bird populations because there are so many people feeding birds that it does help at this population level.
Did we talk about the name of this show yet since we began talking, Michaela? Because we had an announcement to make, didn't we?
Well, you had an announcement to make.
Well, you sent an email in which you gave this show, this segment, this twice a month segment, a great name that I'm going to introduce. We're going to call this Wandering Nature News. And I told you that sounded pretty neat to me because I imagine that this is going to be a regular segment about wandering in nature for people of a wandering nature.
Mm-hmm. Shout out to my mom for helping me come up with the title.
Way to go. Thank you. You have multiple events now. We had one big event, the candlelit ski hike and snowshoe event on February 18th that we knew about that was happening at Gooseberry Falls State Park. And now I find that you've created another neat event. Do you want to share with the public what you've got going?
A shout out to my new friend Madeline from Two Harbors Public Library. But we're going to start putting on some craft programs together, kind of moving my community creations to the library in hopes that it's going to be more accessible for folks. So this is going to be Friday, February 10th, and this is from 2 to 3 p.m., and we are going to be making fairy houses out of some natural materials and recycled materials. And during that, you will be learning about fairy friends, fungi, and how fairies why they might like fungi and why fungi are so important to Minnesota's ecosystems, especially in the North Woods.
I know there's a phenomenon called a fairy ring, but you're not talking about fairy rings when you say fairies, are you?
We're talking about those cute little magical ones.
So you're not, the person who came before you several years ago in this position, Carolyn, and I got into it big time because I'm kind of one of those skeptical guys, and she was big on Bigfoot. Now, I came at this fairy thing thinking, should I be skeptical and saying, show me the pictures that you've got from your GoPro of these fairies, but I'm not going to do that because this is just too delightful.
Yeah.
I don't want to discourage anyone from
and people have those cute little fairy gardens, right, with their house plants and stuff. And we can talk cryptids one day. I sent you that funny little Bigfoot article, which I guess someone actually really did report one near Jay Cook last year. The assistant park manager sent me a news article. So people think that Bigfoot, that the Yeti's out there. So I believe in cryptids. Do I believe in Bigfoot necessarily? I'm not sure. I know there's lots of stuff out there we can't explain. And that's where I leave it.
Well, I held off on going to any of the events that Carolyn hosted at Gooseberry where Bigfoot phenomena and findings and evidence was discussed because I said, unless I can bring Elvis to this event, I'm not coming. And she said, well, keep looking for Elvis then, Leo. And so it was a truce. But this sounds like a lot of fun. And the fairy creations that you're going to make, or can I visualize what these would be? It's as whatever people have found.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to pre-make some little house shapes and they can decorate it as they want. I have tons of birch bark and red pine bark that I have found and feathers and all that stuff. And then I'm going to try to make some little fairies myself out of some feathers and maybe some fake flowers. And it's just going to be a fun time.
Yeah. Yes. This picture is that you've just handed to me is delightful. So I hope some people can find their creative fairy spirit that day and that you will guide them. And Madeline Jarvis, the librarian, is going to help out.
Yeah.
That's going to be a hoot because Madeline has energy to spare.
Yes, I think her and I together is just going to be awesome.
That's exactly the word I would have chosen. Awesome. Awesome energy. Awesome creativity. Well, Michaela, we've kind of run out of time. I know we had some more things we were going to get to. We'll get to some more of them in a couple of weeks, if you don't mind.
Sounds great. Thanks for having me, Leo.
Yes. And in the meantime, good luck with the event at the library, and we'll get a report from you next time, right?
Yes. Everyone stay warm.
Excellent. Well, stay tuned in 2 weeks for Wandering Nature News with Michaela Rice of Gooseberry Falls State Park. She's the naturalist there. Thanks for joining us again, Michaela. We'll see you on the radio. This is Leo for KTWH.